When something like the shooting death of Patrick Liaoya happens, it's easy to question what, if anything, city officials have been doing to prevent this kind of tragedy. As you might imagine, the answer is, it's complicated.
As a city employee, as a city leader, I try not to center my hurt and pain, and I try to remember to center the hurt and pain of our community members because they're grieving, and we have to help to navigate these processes.
This is Stateside. I'm April Baer. For several years now, Brandon Davis has been working as the first director in the Office of Oversight and Public Accountability for the City of Grand Rapids.
So OPA was created in August of 2019. It was really in response to a lot of things. One was, you know, outcries from community. You may recall that there was a 21st century policing plan in Grand Rapids where community members came together with city officials and several recommendations were raised. One of those recommendations was the creation of an office like our office, the Office of Oversight and Public Accountability. In addition to that, our city manager had recently come from Austin, Texas, where there was an Office of Oversight, or I think they call it Office of Police Oversight. So he was very familiar with that functioning, and he saw that as a need in Grand Rapids. So one of the first things he did was create this office to provide additional oversight and accountability with the goal of building bridges to trust. But we know in order to do that, we need to increase accountability and transparency.
In your role, you're sort of a liaison between the community and the police department. Tell us how you approach striking a balance between helping both of these groups of people engage with each other.
Sure. So, you know, a big part of our work is really looking at policies and practices. You know, the conversation in Grand Rapids is not much different than across the nation. We live in a divided country. People generally find themselves on one side or the other of an issue, and there's not a lot of middle ground right now. And I think that's really unfortunate. We need to be in a place where we can understand all perspectives around this in order for us to make the change that needs to be made. And that's really the role our office plays in this space. We listen to both sides. It's not always about making both sides talk to each other, because sometimes you need to create a foundation to do that. But we really do work on listening to the concerns that are raised. And we look at policy with an eye for equity to see what changes can we make to reduce disparities in order to make our public safety system function in a way that is equitable and actually works to achieve justice.
What kinds of programs and initiatives have been put in place since you started this work to try to build bridges? What would you describe as having been this office's achievements?
So I think there are a lot of things that OPA has done. And you know, in times like this, especially with the tragedy that we're seeing, the trauma that our community is going through, it almost feels wrong to try to brag on accomplishments, right? But I am proud of some of the work we're doing. And that work includes our Clean Slate program, which is an expungement program that really looked at the harm that's been caused to individuals by the criminal justice system, meaning that people have committed crimes or were convicted of crimes and they've turned their lives around. And they still find themselves in positions where they can't get housing or they can't get employment. And what our office does is works with them through the Clean Slate laws to help them clear their criminal record in order to be able to get employment, take care of their families, and be productive members of the community. Most recently, we did an expungement program and serviced nearly 400 members of community. And the conversation and that we heard afterwards was, it was life-changing. Individuals were so just moved by the fact that they had the opportunity to change their life. Literally, as I sat at the table and helped people fill out their paperwork, they were crying and saying how grateful they were. That's the type of work that we do in this office.
Mm-hmm. How would you describe this relationship between the community and GRPD in this moment?
Well, I think the trust has been broken a long time ago for many members of community. Incidents like this only exacerbate the breakdown in trust. And when we think about building bridges to trust, I think that's important, but you can't build a bridge on a shaky foundation. You need to first fix the foundation. And I think that's the policy work. That's that deep digging where we have to dig into the core of the foundation of policing and really look at our policing structure. And again, this is not just a GRPD thing. This is a national issue. When we think about policing in America, the truth is that the earliest form of policing in America was really slave patrol. It was designed to prevent slaves from escaping. And throughout the history of our police structure, inequity has been embedded in the structure. So now we're working to fight against those inequities, to build a structure that makes sense so that we can have bridges to trust. Fortunately, we have a chief who believes in building those bridges to trust. And I believe that through the work that we can do in our community, we can make a change.
Yeah. All these things that a lot of people have put their energy and their hearts into. And there are different things happening now with public safety funding. Most Grand Rapids police do now wear body cameras, although as we've seen, sometimes they provide information, sometimes they don't. And this awful, awful video that people have now seen several times of the last moments of Patrick Leoya's life. What do you say to folks who may feel disheartened in this moment and who are asking themselves if it's all been for nothing?
I believe that the anger, the frustration, this disheartening feelings that our community members, many members of our community feel, is fair. We cannot expect people to just feel like, you know, everything is wonderful when they experience or vicariously or directly that type of trauma. When we see those types of things, it should impact us. It should make us question what we're doing. As a city employee, as someone who works in our public safety spaces, I am reevaluating the things that we do. Why are we reevaluating that? Because in these type of circumstances, we need to. You know, our community members are angry and I'm angry, but our community members are hurt and I'm hurt. I mourn with the members of our community over this death, this killing. It is a tough space. These are tough times. And obviously we need to allow the investigatory process to be the investigatory process. And I will monitor that investigation. I will do it transparently and independently and fairly. But that doesn't take away the humanity and the hurt that we feel as a result of that. So to our members of community that are feeling that, I say I stand with you as we grieve the loss of a community member. But my commitment to you is to make sure that we move forward toward justice and continuing to do what's right.
We need to take a quick break. More in just a minute.
Support for Michigan Public's Stateside podcast comes from Lake Trust Credit Union, working to empower financial well-being for Michigan consumers, businesses, and communities. Committed to financial solutions and advice to support people and families. More information at laketrust.org.
Support for the Stateside podcast comes from the University of Michigan's Go Blue Guarantee, committed to keeping a U of M undergraduate education within reach of all Michigan residents, regardless of socioeconomic status. Programs are available for all three campuses. More at goblueguarantee.umich.edu.
Brandon, your office values, among other things, restorative justice. Can you give us an idea of what that might look like in a situation like we find ourselves in now with the Leoya family and GRPD?
Sure. So there's several ways to talk about restorative justice. When we discuss restorative justice in OPA, we generally are talking about our programming efforts that are designed to help people restore their lives when they've been involved in the justice system. And I talked about that a little bit. We talked about our expungement programs and things of that nature. But another way of thinking about restorative justice are those facilitated conversations between, you know, members that are involved in our public safety system and community members. And that's when they have the opportunity to really talk through grievances or talk through frustrations or talk through differences in the way that, you know, situations are perceived. And those are some of the things that, we hope to do moving forward as a city. We hope to navigate spaces by giving community members the opportunity to talk about the harm and the trauma that they're experiencing or they have experienced throughout their lives. We also want to create space for our public safety leaders to hear those conversations so that they can grow from them and grow through them.
Is that something that can happen before the investigative process is over with?
So those are two different things. So if we're talking about directly with the Leoya family has counsel in this case. As a result of that, our interaction with their family directly is through counsel as a city. So those are things that possibly could be done, but that's going to be, we're in a legal process now. So given those pieces, that limits some of the things that could be done directly. But when we talk about community as a whole, we don't need an investigation in order for community to begin to have conversations if they so desire. But obviously, we're still working on that investigation and are looking forward to receiving all the needed information from the Michigan State Police so that we could work through our process.
Yeah. Can I just ask, you said a couple minutes ago that you're in grief and you are angry too. I can only imagine what it's like to be doing this work and to wake up one morning and find that this situation has happened. How are you doing? How are you dealing with this?
Yeah, I appreciate you asking that question. And if I'm honest, there are days where this is very, very hard. The truth of the matter is I'm a Black man in America. And although I work in, these public safety spaces, although I'm an attorney, although I do oversight work, the emotion that comes with these type of instances for me, it's the same as it is for other people in America, specifically Black people in America. We can't hide from the fact that there has been a history of injustice towards Black people through the criminal justice system. Those are just facts. So when I think about that, my heart hurts. I do this work because I want to make a difference, and I still have hope that change can occur. And I'm grateful for the change that has already occurred and the work that we've already done. So at this very moment, I'm hopeful. But if you were to ask me that question, a couple of days ago, you may have gotten more emotion, right? Because this is very real pain. It's very real frustration. I will tell you though, as a city employee, as a city leader, I try not to center my hurt and pain, and I try to remember to center the hurt and pain of our community members because they're grieving, and we have to help to navigate these processes.
Right. You also told us a couple minutes ago that one of the things OPA does is make recommendations on policy issues. Can you give us some examples of some things that have come up? I mean, maybe they're pertinent to traffic stops and what just happened, maybe not, but give us a sense of what kind of policy issues you've been trying to prioritize.
Sure. So one of the things that we did in 2020 was we implemented many of the policies from that Eight Can't Wait campaign, right? So the death of George Floyd obviously brought many of these incidents back in the forefront across the nation. And we began to have more conversations about it. And here in Grand Rapids, we began to implement what is called the Eight Can't Wait initiatives. And when we think about those Eight Can't Wait initiatives, that's really about our use of force policies. And we talk through those. They include lots of things. So Eight Can't Wait, one of the most notable things was, banning chokeholds or things of that nature, or requiring de-escalations and requiring to exhaust all alternatives. And, those are the things that were in the Eight Can't Wait policy. And we began to implement some of those things. So I think that's important. I think there is still work for us to consider and spaces for us to work through as well. and the surveillance policy, we really worked in close partnership with the NAACP to revise the city's surveillance policy to work to add additional protections for our community members as it relates to their privacy rights. Those are the types of things we look at, especially when it's brought up by our community members, to say, are there inequities or are there better ways for us to do this that serve community in a better way? That's what we want to do.
There were some pieces of legislation that were introduced in Lansing that would have made some similar kinds of reforms. And as folks may be aware, they kind of got stuck there in committee. Can you say anything about what the value of talking about these things at a city level, or whether it would have had to have come at a state level? I mean, if those things are going to happen, can they happen within our local communities?
I think we have to work at every level to address these type of concerns. So there's definitely space for statewide legislation governing the way our police departments operate. When you look at other states, there are other states who have implemented that type of legislation. And I think it helps for community members to understand how they're going to be policed everywhere. Right. I don't want to try to brush responsibility from the city of Grand Rapids. No, there's space for us to implement our own reforms. But do I think the statewide reforms are going to be more impactful on a greater level? Most certainly.
Yeah. I want to ask, it's really not clear what the city's response will be, what we will look back at 5 years and say, this is what happened because of Patrick Leoya's death. But let's say for a moment that the city commission, the city manager, come together on a plan to put more teeth in oversight. What are the options for additional civilian review of our police?
So in the city of Grand Rapids, we do have a civilian appeals board. The civilian appeals board has the opportunity on certain types of cases to review closed cases of our internal affairs division, meaning once a finding has been made by the internal affairs division, our civilian appeals board can review those findings and review those reports to determine if they essentially agree with those findings. And if they don't, they have the ability to overturn those findings, again, in certain types of cases, if an appeal is made by the complainant. That is a very important process, and we are in the process of beginning to reimagine our civilian appeals board and how we can better streamline those processes. But those are examples of the types of things that can be done. Also, our office is completely independent of the police department. The reason we exist is to be able to give that civilian perspective on policing matters. And we try to work closely with community to hear concerns regarding those issues, at least to give us a jump start on where to look, what to study, and what to recommend.
And that's the Stateside Podcast for today. You can find full episodes of Stateside streaming at michiganradio.org. Today's pod was produced by our executive producer, Laura Weber-Davis. Additional producers on the show include Aaron Allen, April Van Buren, Mike Blank, and Mercedes Mejia. Our podcast theme comes from Blue Dot Sessions. I'm April Baer. Thank you for listening. We'll see you tomorrow.